This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
10:30 here in Power Perspective. Thank you very much for staying with us. Thank you to the SACP's Solly Mapaila for joining us for that conversation. Remember, lines open for you throughout the evening on 0861-987-000. We're now talking about corruption, and Corruption Watch released their analysis of 2021 corruption trends, and revealing, of course, the extent to which corrupt activities continue unabated in this country, particularly focusing on the first half of the year. And interesting there, a few minutes before we wrapped up that conversation with Solly Mapaila, where he was talking about how the party is not corrupt, that yes, where there are some members who are corrupt, they mustn't bring, or in fact, they bring the party into disrepute, but that does not mean that the party itself is corrupt. Of course, corruption is not limited to the governing party. Corruption extends to anybody in any position of power who chooses to abuse their positions, who chooses to cut corners, dodge laws and regulations, dodge principles of fairness, principles of integrity, and operating as such, of course, contributing to a state where people who want to speak out against something that is wrong, against injustice, often find themselves in a spot of bother. And as we now know, in the most recent case as well, of a matter where somebody spoke out internally, was feared to be about to speak out as well, lost their life as a result of that. We see it with the police. We see it in the public sector broadly, right? We see it in the private sector, businesses, people needing to pay in order to get out of a spot of bother. Whether it's you and I, we've been speeding and we should get a ticket. Instead, we pull out a 100 rand note to that officer and then get away with it, right? It's rife. It's a problem. And we're discussing now just how bad has it been, particularly from their findings from the 2021 Analysis of Corruption Trends report. Researcher at Corruption Watch, Melusi Ncala, joins us now on the line. Melusi, it's good to have you on the show. Hi.
Good evening, and thank you for having us.
I don't think you'll shock us at all, Melusi, this evening. Every night we talk about how bad these issues are. But I think you'll certainly surprise us with perhaps, or bring some clarity to, is what the data actually says, right? And sometimes it may just be a perception, but when supported by data, we should all feel even more worried, even more concerned about how bad things really are in our country.
I'm surprised you're saying that I'm not going to shock everyone. So it's just
you're about to.
No, I'm not. I mean, we can end the interview at this point in time. Everybody knows what corruption is.
We know. It's done. Thank you for joining us.
it's a tragic story. And one of the key points that I made in this particular edition of the ACT report, as we call it, ACT report, is that, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Mm. I'm surprised that the previous speaker, Mr. Solly, was mentioning that it's not the ANC that's corrupt, whereas the president actually himself pointed out that the ANC stands accused number one. And, you know, when we're looking at these reports of corruption, that's what they're speaking to. They're speaking to a corruption issue that is across all boards in political parties, in government, and then also in various companies. And it's 1,964 reports of corruption where we get to understand that police corruption is rife. It's at 12%. It continues to be a trending area, as has been the case in previous editions of this report. It's followed by a growing trend where we are looking at COVID-related corruption issues. That's at 8%, which is followed by corruption in schools at 6% and public housing, which is at 4%. And then in terms of the types of corruption that we see emanating is maladministration and procurement corruption, which is at 16%.
Mm.
It's followed by fraud. It's followed by as well as bribery, extortion, and other forms of corruption. So it's across the spectrum, and the issues are numerous.
Particularly this year, Melusi, we obviously have had to really deal with findings from the likes of the SIU following trails leading to all sorts of nonsense that happened, particularly around PPE, right? It's a time where you have, you know, departments such as health, where we spend big money. Think about education as well. We allocate a lot of money as well because of how big the sector itself is. And that is an opportunity for those who are close to the kitties in those departments, of course, to take chances there. Compared to what we've seen previously, with this context in mind, the time that we find ourselves in during a pandemic and, having to do things that would previously not been required to do in fighting this particular pandemic, what perhaps are some of the major differences that we've seen? Of course, even around reporting as well, but where some of these corrupt activities have been taking place?
Yeah. So if I can just give in terms of a context, and this is perhaps why when we decided on the release of this particular edition, we actually decided to go from an multimedia approach, and we did a podcast. And the podcast primarily tells the story of some of these issues so that people can have a better context of what's happening and also explore some of the data issues. So one of the issues that we explore in the particular podcast relates to how the COVID environment has been exploited by people pretending to be officials or working alongside officials, for example, in the licensing department, where they will take people's ID information, return back to them and tell them that they've got fines that they need to pay for, ask people to make cash payments, and only to find that people have been defrauded. You know, those are the kind of issues. But then it also extends to the health sector, where you have officials, at least some of those who are colluding with companies. And we've got one or a couple of cases where companies are tasked with the responsibility of rolling out vaccines, and only to find that they do not have the skills or expertise to do so, and the state has lost hundreds of millions of rands. So, you know, these are the kind of cases that we are looking at. And then, of course, there's the usual PPE, which is actually unfortunate to refer to it as usual. PPE corruption that has manifested in the last 18 months or so. So those are the kind of issues that we are looking at. But these are issues that are actually affecting ordinary people, right? I'm thinking particularly now of school children, where principals will steal PPE, funds meant to procure PPE, and they will use it for themselves, or at least sell the PPE so that they can profit from it. So those are the kind of things that we are looking at.
Talk to us a bit, Melusi, about where the majority of complaints were in fact coming from. So how they spread across the country, the different provinces as well.
So the majority of cases stem from Gauteng, which is 42%. And this is followed by KwaZulu-Natal, 10%, Western Cape at 9%, and I think Eastern Cape at 7%. But worth noting as well is that over 50% of these cases come from metropolitans. And here in particular, city of Johannesburg. Again, this is another, there's a very interesting case that we look at in the podcast in relation to the city and its municipal entity, the Johannesburg Development Agency. And then following that is city of Tswane, the capital, and which is followed by Ekurhuleni, city of Cape Town, eThekwini municipality. So these are all the municipalities that form part of The most cases, at least based on whistleblower accounts that we have received between the 1st of January and the end of June.
Talking about whistleblowers, Melusi, we have been speaking, of course, about the matter in the Department of Health in the province, the violent death of Babita Deokaran. It's the sort of story, the sort of incident that for anybody who wanted to speak out against any form of corruption, whether it's bribery or even the worst kind, or we're talking extortion or whatever it might be, abuse of authority, that they'll think twice. They'll think twice about whether or not it makes sense, whether or not it's safe for them to speak out about this sort of thing.
Yeah, it's just bribery behavior within government and also these corporations that, there's this double speak. We want to deal with corruption, but at the same time, we will deal with those who want to deal with corruption. And it's most unfortunate because it puts people in a very vulnerable position. And it's mostly because, the Protective Disclosures Act primarily protects employees. But now what we do as Corruption Watch, we try to have a more holistic, and in fact, we are calling for a more holistic to whistleblowing, that everybody should be protected when they do so. So hence, we encourage members of the public to approach organizations such as ourselves and to report incidents of corruption, because we assure them of anonymity and confidentiality, and we keep the information secure on our systems. But a lot needs to be done to protect whistleblowers, and a lot needs to be done to ensure that an environment is created that is conducive for whistleblowing. We can't have situations like this one where a person gets killed just to create that fear in society so that people don't report corruption. But we know we think at least the 2,000 people and the people that continue to blow the whistle, they're brave. They are people with a lot of resilience, and they withstood the test of time in terms of saying that, it either we do the right thing or we continue as is. They recognize what's happening in the society, and it takes heart. As difficult as it is, it takes a particular person with a particular mindset to do what these whistleblowers are doing. Mm-hmm. But hence, we also encourage whistleblowers to inform themselves before they whistleblow, and to take all precautions to make sure that the people that they report to are credible, have integrity, and are assuring them of acting in an ethical way.
The focus is, of course, on local government elections. We're going to the polls in just 5 weeks' time. Give us a sense of the sort of reports that you've received as Corruption Watch over the last couple of years from whistleblowers.
We recently released a report looking at local government. So between 2012 and the end of 2020, Corruption Watch received approximately 33,000 reports of corruption. 16% of these are about local government. And the issues that are quite prevalent there, or at least the hotspots, is that about 34% highlight issues in the office of the municipal manager. It's followed by local police or metro police, and as well as the housing department at the local level. And the issues there too, what we see, that procurement, the issues of procurement where companies operate as cartel structures, paying officials kickbacks only to make sure that they receive tenders for years, some instances for decades. You have the same companies receiving tenders, but then yet there's no improvement in communities. Issues of maintenance remain. There's no maintenance. There's no infrastructure development. People are still without water and sanitation. People don't have houses. So it's just a sorry state of affairs.
Can we pinpoint, I'm looking at a graph here, about the reports relating to local government, right? So when we kind of think about the or look at the spikes in particular, the trend is such that it's gone up from last year or from 2019 to 2020, and again to 2017 something happens that it dips a bit. What are these a function of? So even from 2012 to 2013, there's a bit of a dip. It goes up again from 2014 and slightly dips again. Do we have a sense of what some of the shifts or changes might be that contributed to this?
It's a variety of issues. I think we need to also just look at how extraordinary the upward trend is when it does go up, right? So it could be either the factors are that, you know, we either do campaigns in communities or we have more of a presence in certain communities. And or it could be that local government-related issues that people feel quite strongly about and they want to blow the whistle. But the 2021, when there were almost 900 reports of corruption reported in relation to local government, here what we need to acknowledge is that or at least concede to the fact that most of these cases had to do with procurement at that level and the councillors being involved in corruption during this period, right? So when people were expecting councillors to give them food parcels, those were being given out based on who do you know and, you know, whether you are a friend or close ally of the councillor. When people were expecting to be given proper housing, people were given structures that could collapse at any point in time, as we've seen in Limpopo, for example. So, you know, it's a number of factors, just to reiterate, but most significantly, we need to look at what happened during the COVID period, and that will tell us a better story.
Higher numbers of reports, whistleblower reports, don't necessarily mean that area is said to have the highest rates of corruption, because it might be that in some parts of the country, people just know for a fact, if I say anything, I'm toast, right? If I say anything, I'll be in trouble. Nothing will be done about it. Or is that not entirely accurate?
Yeah, you know, it's a tricky situation because it's difficult to measure corruption, right? There's no real tangible and scientific method to measure the extent of how destructive corruption is or how prevalent corruption is. So what we go about is perceptions. But as I often like arguing, at least internally with Corruption Watch, also in public, is that the whistleblower mechanism also gives us a far better feel for what's happening in the environment. So it does not necessarily mean that, yes, this particular area is the most corrupt, because we need to look at issues of population density. Gauteng, for example, has over 15 million people living in it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the data is comparable. You can't necessarily say that, oh, no, because it's 15 million people, therefore there's so many cases. We need to look at what are the nature of these cases. What are people actually reporting? So is it possible that people are being intimidated in certain areas? Definitely. I don't think that's far-fetched. We've seen what's happening in areas, in various municipalities, KwaZulu-Natal, for example, you know, where the political fights or at least whistleblowers have been treated in a very terrible way, at least in as far as the allegations go. We know this is attributed to political infighting and political factions. So it's widespread, definitely, and there are many factors contributing to it, to the reporting of corruption.
Mm. My guest this evening is Melusi Ngalan, who is a researcher at Corruption Watch, and we're having a conversation about their 2021 analysis of corruption trends report, also what the podcast as well, the multimedia component, showing that showing the extent to which corruption has continued unabated during the first half of this year, but also reflecting on trends across the country, also trends of what's happening at the local government level. And I think this is, of course, of particular interest given the fact that we are heading to the local government elections. Might this be a key consideration for yourself? Or are you saying, but of course, I knew this. I knew this is what is happening in my municipality. Jump in on the discussion on 0861 987 000. It's 10 to the top of the hour.
7 Zilengambule, Monday to Thursday, 8 p.m. to midnight on Power 98.7.
Evening, Ms. Ngambule. This topic on corruption. I was in a taxi not long ago. When I got into a taxi, there was a heated discussion about REF and payouts and so on. I didn't know how the discussion started, what it was all about. But as time went on, the taxi driver said to me that, you know what, should you hear of anybody who was in an accident and REF paid out, please get that person's details and get in contact with us. And I asked him why. He said so that we can claim again for that person. REF will pay out the second time. I said, how is that possible? He said, no, don't worry. That is done all the time. And he said, then we will share the money. And I was like, but how is that possible? He said, no, don't worry about that. That is being done all the time. So anyway, just thought I should share that such things do happen. Seemingly people claim twice for the same accident, for the same person.
Sure. Yeah, no. Send those voice notes on 0833037093. Still joined on the line by Melusi Ngala, who's a researcher with Corruption Watch. And we are talking about trends in corruption and what the 2021 analysis on corruption has revealed. Melusi, perhaps you might want a quick comment on that last voice note, but let's also then move on to the so-called municipal hotspots, if you will, right, where these issues are happening. So the person on the voice note was speaking about the road accident fund, but here in the report you talk a lot about traffic and you talk a bit about the likes of traffic and licensing. You talk about housing and human settlements, the metro and local police, and then at a percentage of 30%. You talk about the office of the municipal manager.
Yeah, just in response to the caller or the listener, there was a period in time when we used to receive whistleblower accounts relating to the road accident fund. And to my recollection, these didn't necessarily point a finger at taxi drivers, which is quite an interesting development. I would actually encourage people with such information to report it to Corruption Watch. If anything, it assists in us collating this data and writing these research reports for advocacy purposes, because then we're able to say, so we may not necessarily say, okay, fine, your case as UC7Vida, you know, will be investigated, but if 20 or 50 or 100 or 1,000 of you report cases of corruption in a particular area relating to a particular issue, then we are able to lobby and advocate the government or other sectors must intervene, and something that's to get done to fix that, because that's what ultimately counts. And I also want to say that in addition to that, before I go to the hotspots, I know you asked me about that, that we all as a collective have a responsibility for society, right? To say that, what kind of society do we want to mold? I know it seems a bit righteous to talk about, well, what kind of morals do we inculcate as a people? But ultimately, if we want to see change, we need to be that change. We need to be the people that start doing things differently and not just expecting others to do differently before we do something. So, as you mentioned, Cecilia did about paying 100 rand for equality when you're stopped by a traffic officer. You know, it's a decision that we ultimately make. Yes, there are other factors, there are other systemic issues that we need to deal with. But while we deal with the systemic issues related to corruption, we also need to make those individual changes. And which then brings me to the traffic and licensing issue that you mentioned in relation to the local government report that we published a month or so ago. And that is what we see there is a large amount of people, about 70 to 80% with paying bribes to traffic officers. So yes, in most of these cases, the traffic officers would be the ones soliciting the bribes and people will acquiesce and pay them. And if they don't pay bribes in some instances, the police officers become quite aggressive. They take their belongings or become violent. You know, that does happen. But in some instances, people also get scammed. You know, there are some police officers operating, for example, in Ekurhuleni near the airport that will make a determination whether you are locally based or international, and then they try to get a quick buck from you. So those kind of things happen. And then in relation to the Office of the Municipal Manager, there are issues of nepotism there, where appointees will be made based on who they know or their proximity to power, whether they are close to politicians and managers. But again, I need to emphasize here, this is not necessarily saying that the managers are the ones who are ultimately and solely corrupt in the municipality. What we need to understand is that municipalities comprise of primarily two arms, right? It's the political and the administrative arms. Mm. So we as the citizens vote for the politicians, who in turn then go and recruit the managers. So there's that intersection there happening that we need to be wary of and say that what's the role of the politicians? Because they're also implicated. Just like we have mentioned in the podcast, for example, there's this Johannesburg Development Agency where this whistleblower spoke about how the agency was being manipulated by politicians to enrich themselves.
Mm-hmm. One quick tweet here from Unique who says, corruption is our culture here in Mzansi, and people are suffering because of this corruption. You blow a whistle, you get killed. The truth is whistleblowers' lives are in danger because if you don't have bodyguards, how are you going to be protected? Eish, things are tough, says Unique. A very depressing, but I think an honest note, really, of how people feel about this. Melusi, we are completely out of time, and I appreciate you joining us this evening.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you all.
Thank you. Research at Corruption Watch, Melusi Ngala on the line there.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.